You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone, and you're welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 2, Episode 13. We were away last week, but we're back with a bang tonight. John, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Kieran. It's great to be back.
So, a huge show lined up on this lovely sunny evening. We're going to speak to the former Republic of Ireland international, Joe Gamble. Of course, before Graham Burke, he was the last man from the League of Ireland to get a full call-up. We're going to speak about the Ireland game shortly too, John. I know you have some strong views on the Irish performance. We'll speak to Alan Keane, Sligo Rovers legend, 7 major honours, including a league title at Sligo and Dundalk. We speak to Alan about his career in the League of Ireland, and he also had strong views on the Bitter Red performances this season. We'll speak to veteran League of Ireland boss Alan Matthews, of course, manager of many clubs including Longford, Shelburne, Bray and Athlone. A man who faced so many financial issues at clubs down the years, and he has some strong views on the goings on at Bray in recent days. And finally, we're joined by the El Clasico hero. Aaron Brilley was the goal scorer on the night for Athlone Town as they picked up only their second point of the season with a draw against Longford in the Midlands Derby. But John, let's start first by introducing our first guest of the night. Joe Gamble, as I said, was the last man before Graham Burke to earn a full Ireland call-up, and we spoke to him about the big call-up for Graham Burke in recent days. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're honoured to be joined online now by former Republic of Ireland international Joe Gamble. Joe, of course, was the last League of Ireland player before Graham Burke to get a full Ireland call-up. Joe, you're welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.
So, Joe, as I said there in my intro, your first Ireland call-up came in 2006, but it was 2007 until you got an actual cap against Ecuador, and 3 days later you started in the starting 11 for Ireland against Bolivia. Did you feel that had a big effect on the league at the time, and do you feel Graham Burke's debut in recent days can have a massive effect on the League of Ireland?
Did I think it had a big effect in the league? Not really, to be quite honest. I don't think there was a big foray in terms of players, you know, queuing up to get into the squad. Look, obviously I was the last one, so it couldn't have had that much of an effect in terms of players actually getting in the squad. I suppose what I hopefully did, it was raise profile within the league, and it showed that there's capable players. But in terms of Graham Burke and his inclusion, I hope that Manny Roy Keane look at it in terms of merit for the international side, not just token justice, which I don't think they have done. I mean, if that was the case, there'd be a lot more players than Graham Burke would have gone in the squad. Shawnee Maguire, I mean, look, what he did in the first 6 months of Cork City was unprecedented, and all of a sudden he didn't get in the squad. So I hope this Graham Burke's inclusion would change up, and then, you know, as I said in other interviews recently, like the Cairn Sadler and the lad Benson at Dundalk, I think they're well capable of easily playing international football, and hopefully they'll be included as well.
Yeah, Joe, it's funny. John Caulfield came out this week saying that there should be mandatory 3 League of Ireland players per squad. You know, he was talking about Robbie Benson like you did, and Kieran Sadlier. So what's your thoughts on having a mandatory number?
Look, without sounding disrespectful, and that's nonsense, why would you have a mandatory players in an international squad? What's that really say? Like, you're there because you just played in the League of Ireland, or are you there because you're a hand-me-down, like a charity, like, or do you want to be there on merit? No player. Now, you ask any player in this league, or any player anywhere, they do not want to be a mandatory going to international training camp. Like, your kids, these are professional footballers in this country. They're playing their own trade. They're making the best of what they can. They don't want hand-me-downs. Oh, lads, here's a 3-day training camp, whatever. Oh, thanks very much, no lads, but that's it. That's, look, I don't really disrespect it, but why should there be mandatory training regimes? No, Manny and Roy Keane are not charities. There's no way, and they shouldn't be either. They should not be charities for giving any caps. That's the case. Every cap was before them, including mine, was just a hand-me-down. So I don't believe that for 1 minute. I'm sorry, but I think that's nonsense. So I think they should be there for merit, and that's all. If they're good enough, they're good enough. If they're not, that's it.
Interesting stuff there, Joe. Also, what was interesting, of course, in your career, we all know the success you had at Cork City, and then going across to England, but you retired in 2015 off the back of a Singapore League title win with DPMM. What was that like as an experience playing in Asia?
It was amazing, to be quite honest. I think it was the best, probably one of the best 2 years of my career in terms of just, it was came at an unexpected time. It wasn't something that I had planned, and just the lifestyle I had there, you know, my wife and three kids, just in terms of like their lifestyle, you know, different schools, traveling around that part of the world, different culture, was fantastic. And it wasn't as, I suppose, if you're looking at it from the outside, thinking, you know, it was a major culture shock. Like, I mean, where I lived, it was an ex-British colony, driving the same side of the road, speak English very, very well, not far off the same supermarkets that you get in England. So it wasn't as if, you know, it was in the back of nowhere. And just the football and lifestyle, as I said, was fantastic. Really enjoyed it. I wish I could have played another few years. They were unfortunately in injury since I was 16. Came back, kind of, I had all to my career, really. Came back to haunt me, and I was never really going to be able to play professionally for much longer. So to get the 2 years on the back of that, at the end of it, was great.
And of course, you were working with Steve Keane at DPMM. He's a man that was ridiculed during his time in English football, but he seems to be greatly respected abroad. What did you learn under Steve?
To be fair, I learned quite a lot, actually. To be very honest, I learned a lot of tactics and shape and some stuff he did in training, on the training ground, I would never seen before. And look, you wouldn't learn the whole encyclopedia, because, you know, you're going to pick nuggets from different managers, but there was definitely four or five different sort of sessions he put on there that were extremely good. I think he got ridiculed, really, for, I suppose, for things that maybe looking back on were a bit not his fault, really, should I say. I mean, the whole Blackburn job, you know, he was told to sell players, to cut the budget. I mean, fans obviously blame the manager for selling them. I don't think he was at fault for that. I mean, that's just the way football is. Mm-hmm. The owner tells you you've got to sell someone because you got to pay the wages, then what you say, no, because if you say no, he's going to get rid of you anyway, he's going to get someone else in to do it. So I think he was probably harshly criticised. But that is football, that's the way it goes. It's a cutthroat business. You make one mistake or one perceived mistake and that's it, you're tarnished with that name. So I feel perceived in that respect, but look, he's a fantastic coach, no doubt about it. Of all the coaches I would have worked with, he's definitely up there in terms of his organisation skills, his tactical ability, and his great ability to, which is a great skill for any coach during the game, to change the tactics and the personnel and to kind of give you insight information and useful information, not the normal rubbish you might get. You know, come on, lads, and all that sort of stuff. That's, you know, anyone could say that. It's sort of the in-depth knowledge that he has, which was great, and I really learned a lot from him.
And of course, it was under Steve you kind of took your first step into coaching. You're obviously the Limerick FC strength and conditioning coach at the moment. How are you finding that role at Limerick, and is that becoming a much larger part of League of Ireland football now?
Sorry, can you repeat that? Sorry, the first part, sorry.
I was just asking you, in terms of League of Ireland football, is it a much bigger part now, the strength and conditioning, and how are you finding the role so far?
I find the role very enjoyable, to be quite honest. It's something, as I said, look, I'm used to it to a certain aspect, because when I was in Brunei, I was kind of playing and helping out Steve in the S&C role, so that prepared me for my role now in a full-time capacity. In terms of League of Ireland, I think, look, it is a massive part of the game. There's no doubt about it. The one thing I noticed as I played against better teams and top-level teams, the biggest thing that stood out for me, not just the technical ability, but their physicality. They were much faster, much stronger, much more athletic. They weren't just good footballers. And I couldn't be wrong if I said I come off the pitch and said, oh, technically he was far superior to me. I would always probably lean the other way. He was far superior because he was just faster, stronger, quicker to the ball, I mean, and that's a lot of teams. And I think if you ask most professionals, they go up the ladder and they play against better players. That's the one thing that stands out. Athletically, fellas are, you know, they're immense condition. And if you're playing in Europe, footballer, with like Corsi and Dundalk, I would say that they'll say the same thing. Physically, teams are just in great condition, and to compete against them, you have to be in similar stature.
Joe, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon.
No problem. Thanks very much. Pleasure. Take care, Ed.
Thanks, Joe.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Good to hear from Joe there, and yeah, it was great to see Graham Burke playing there for Ireland. Hopefully, you know, we've talked about the magic aeroplane before, haven't we? About players from Ireland having to go over to England before they get recognised. So hopefully this is a change in tact. But Kieran, I wanted to talk to you just briefly about, I know we're League of Ireland podcast, but briefly about the international match, because I know there was a lot of talk about the conditions, but for me, very, very, very poor performance from Ireland.
Yeah, well, I think, John, you know, at this stage, from speaking to me, I'm obviously an Irish season ticket holder, go to games home and away. That I'm not a Martin O'Neill fan, simple as that. I think his style of football is absolutely atrocious. I know the argument always is we're a small country and we don't have the players, but I think that's a very negative attitude to have. And for Ireland to be going out in most games and having roughly 20% of possession, I don't know how you're going to entice people out. I think what we're going to see now, obviously, with Ireland not qualifying for a World Cup with no real major games coming up now this calendar year, I think you're going to see a major drop in attendances at the Aviva. And when that happens and results don't go the Irish way, you often see then a change of management coming. And I think this tenure for O'Neill isn't going to see out the full 2 years.
Well, for me, Kieran, there was the disaster against Denmark, but there's been absolutely nothing to say that anything's going to change since that. That's the problem I have, Kieran.
I think
there's no silver lining on any cloud, as far as I can see.
I think what he's tried to do is bring young players into the squad, and usually when you see young players coming into an international squad, there's a fresh, you know, feeling about the team, and there's a bit of excitement going out to watch them. But what Martin O'Neill has done, he's brought in the young players, yes, and he's brought in a couple of League of Ireland players, which is great, but they're still playing in this Stone Age system, and the players aren't learning. Martin O'Neill surely isn't learning anything from these performances. We all know this is the way he's going to play his football going forward for the next 2 years. I just can't see anything changing. And for me, if Ireland can scrape through to Euro 2020, that's great. But I really don't think this is the way forward for Irish football.
No, I think you've every right to be worried, Kieran, under the current situation, because I can't see any improvement. But look, we need to move on. We need to cheer ourselves up. So let's kick off with going through the results from last weekend. And we'll start with the match between Dundalk and Bray, which ended up 5-0. And to be fair, Kieran, this could have been 7 or 8. Lots and lots of chances. The main talking point from this match was an awful leg break for young McGovern. All we can do is wish him well. It looked awful, Kieran.
Absolutely horrendous. And I know from speaking to friends that were at the game and were in the shed, and it happened right in front of the shed, that they just said it was one of the worst injuries they've ever seen. And I think you could hear on the crowd reaction on Soccer Republic just how haunting it was to see. And for me, Soccer Republic, I don't think really should have shown that. It was quite graphic. But look, all we can do is wish McGovern the very best of recoveries.
Yeah, let's hope he gets back on a football pitch at some stage, because it did look a bad one. Mm. Anyway, going on to the match, Kieran, like I said, this could have been 7 or 8-0. This Dundalk completely dominant over Bray. Pat Hoban tapping. How many times this season have I said Bray being undone with a long ball over the top?
Yeah, look, I think Bray are just at sixes and sevens at the moment, John. We spoke a couple of weeks ago about a mini revival of Bray, but you were saying there, obviously, the main talking point from this game was that horrible injury to McGovern. But prior to the game, all the talk was about off-field situation again at Bray. A good friend of the podcast, Dan Gorman, who is a journalist in Wicklow, he tweeted before the game to say that Bray players had allegedly gone unpaid again this week. There's an injury crisis, a huge injury crisis now at Bray. I know there was a lot of people that were a bit suspicious about their injury list, saying that maybe these are players that have gone unpaid, but I definitely don't think that's the case. They are genuine injuries. And we're starting to see underage players now having to get drafted into the Bray squad. And with everything that's going on, it's no surprise that they're taking beatings like this.
Yeah, young Dragos had to come on. He was with Longford Town's under 17 last season, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was a very promising talent for Longford Town's under 17s. I know he had trials abroad as well, but seems to be he was rejected, apparently, from what I'm told, by the 19s management. Now, whether that's the case or not remains to be seen. But he's been good enough, obviously, to go on and get into the Bray underage system and be drafted into the first team. And for me, he's a great talent to watch. So keep an eye on him, Bray fans.
Yeah, so Dundalk 5 goals. Hoban took the first, as we said, after a long ball caused the damage in the Bray defence. Dylan Connolly got the second after again poor defending, I can only say. And then after Hoban hit the post, after some great work by Michael Duffy, there was atrocious defending. Connor Kenner let the ball go over his head. Jamie McGrath took advantage. That was 3-0. Ruben Header made it four, and substitute Marco, give me his surname, Kieran.
Marco Takajumi.
That's the fella. He made it 5-0. lots more chances. Could have been 7 or 8. Could have been double figures. It'll be one to forget for Bray.
Yeah, back-to-back goals for Takajumi. Now he's becoming a bit of a folk hero already up in Oriel Park. But as you said, one to forget for Bray, but a great win for Dundalk to get the confidence up.
Indeed, and they're looking good at the top. Cork in the shadows of Dundalk currently, just by a couple of points. They went to Pats. Very impressive victory, this one, 3-1.
Yeah, Pats have been in great form in recent weeks, so I think a lot of people were interested to see how this one would go, especially considering that the first game between these two sides early on in the season was an absolute classic, and Pats were very unlucky to lose out that night. But you're going to talk us through what happened this one.
Some good goals in play in this game. I mean, a very, very quick goal. This first goal must have been
13 seconds, I think it was, a credit to that.
Very quickly. Sadly, a great run from Sadley from the kickoff. He was brought down for a penalty. He got up and scored it himself to make it 1-0. And I think it's probably one of the quickest goals you'll see this season is that. Brennan had an effort and went over the other end. Cummins, he had a couple of chances. Missed them. And Cork were punished by Conan Byrne after a great run by one of the young talents at Pats, James Dooner.
Yeah, Conan Byrne in cracking form at the moment. Obviously, another podcast rival of ours, John. But James Dooner as well, a player who hasn't really reached the heights I think a lot of people would have expected after his controversial move from Shamrock Rovers. But good to see those two players linking up there.
Yeah, and again, Dooner was provider as Birmingham hit the bar. So, I mean, they had the chances there, the Pats, to go 2-1 up. But this game was settled with a lovely Kieran strike to make it 2-1. And then you've probably all seen the third and final goal from Cork. Basically, the keeper comes up for a corner. Pat's keeper comes up. It breaks to Sadley on the edge of the box. And he just lashes
inside,
it.
Inside his own
inside
box.
Inside the box.
Yeah.
He just lashes it and the ball goes in.
Yeah, I don't think Pat's have learned their lesson. Sending goalkeepers up doesn't seem to be the best tactic for them if you go all the way back to that famous cup final in 2003 when Longford Town took advantage in the dying seconds. But an incredible goal from Sadler. Do you think he meant it?
I'm sure he did, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he did. No, I think he did.
I think just on Sadler in general, his performances have really picked up in recent weeks. We're seeing a lot of talk about him now being a player that could possibly go on to play for Ireland in the future. I don't think his performances at the start of the season were anywhere near as good as they could have been. And we've seen him out of the Cork team, in fact, but from speaking to people down at Cork, they feel that Sadler's been held back to get the best of him coming later into the season. So we'll watch with interest there, John.
Yeah, I think he's a class player, Kieran, and I can understand why there's calls for him to be selected for Ireland.
Jimmy Keohane's goal, I have to say, overshadowed by that, but that was a fantastic strike from Keohane as well.
Lovely strike, Kieran. Yeah. So and a really good win for Cork. That was a real banana skin going to Pats. And yeah. You know, that's a great result for them.
More tough fixtures coming up for Cork in the next few weeks, so they're in a real battle now to try and get back on the top of the table, but we'll speak about their upcoming fixtures later on, John.
Yeah, we'll move on to the RSC, where Waterford, they found it very easy against Derry, 4-0, and another team where I'm going to have to go to town on the defending here. And Aaron McAniff shot wide early on, but then, you know, it was all Waterford really after that. Rory Feely opened the scoring after Derry failed almost inexplicably to clear a corner. You know, it was almost like an air shot again. Yeah. And poor defending at this level let Akinadi make it 2-0. And, you know, it was a really poor start from Derry.
Yeah, obviously we had no show last week, so I didn't get a chance to highlight Rory Feely, but I was at the game in Oriel where Waterford were unlucky to lose out to Dundalk recently, and Rory Feely I thought was absolutely superb for Waterford, so he's certainly a player to keep the eye on. But as you mentioned, the set piece defender from Derry for those first two goals was absolutely atrocious, John.
Yeah, not good enough at this level. Man playing his last match for Waterford, Vigoro, he saved well from Patterson at 2-0. They're going to miss him, Kieran.
Yeah, last home game, I think he's available for this weekend as far as I know, John, but he's going to be a huge loss for me. Head and shoulders, the best goalkeeper in the league this season.
Yeah, I agree. He's been excellent and he will be a big loss to them. Great third goal, Sander Puri, a marvellous run and shot from distance.
Yeah, again, as I said, I was at the game in Oriel and Puri was picking up similar positions to where he scored that goal from, and I felt he wasn't really having any real impact on the game. He's seen more as a winger, so to see him drifting inside, I was a bit concerned that maybe he wasn't going to have much of an effect, but what a goal that was. When you give him time and space, he's lethal, and Derry gave him plenty of that.
Yeah, and they shouldn't have done that. They should know better. They should, you know, that he had to be stopped before he got a chance to unleash that shot. But look, more hopeless defending. That gave Courtney Doofus a great chance, but he dawdled a bit too long and failed to take it. But the writing was on the wall, and they finished for the fourth through Abora. That was another lovely
beautiful
finish, wasn't
goal.
It?
And, yeah. Glad to see Abora get that one, because there was a lot of talk recently after his another sending off. He's a man who's had so many red cards throughout his career. If he was good enough to maintain his place in that Waterford team over the fact that he does seem to be a bit of a loose cannon. So he's gone out and he's proven a point with his quality. That was an absolutely superb goal from Abora.
So, Kieran, Derry, home and away form, it's Jekyll and Hyde. What are you putting this down to?
This was such a strange performance from Derry, John. They gave so much free space to Waterford in the centre of the park, and that was highlighted by the goals for Abora and Puri. So I'm not really sure what's gone on there. Obviously, they're going to lose Ronan Curtis now, so that's going to free up some transfer funds to bring in a couple of players, and I think that's an area they really do need to look at, because they have the attacking talent in the likes of the Hales, in Rory Patterson.
McInniff,
if they can keep a hold of him too. He's been absolutely outstanding this season. But I think they need they've never really replaced Conor McCormick for me, a real gritty player in midfield. They need someone like that to come in, maybe another experienced defender as well.
Yeah, it wasn't long since we were actually saying, could Derry have an outside chance of the title at one stage?
It's amazing how things swing.
And now they're 16 points off the top, so that is as well
that's
gone.
The fixture congestion for you, just a couple of wins either way can throw you up or down that league table very quickly.
Just while we're talking about Waterford, Kieran, we have to wish Alan Reynolds well. That victim of an awful assault in Tremora, I believe it was. But, you know, he's going to be, he's not going to be involved for a few weeks, I would say, at least.
Yeah, obviously, this comes well ahead of a sporting perspective, but it's going to be interesting to see how Waterford do react to this now, whether they can go out at the weekend now and put in a massive shift for their manager, if maybe their heads are just going to be a little bit down, because from speaking to any guests we've had on from Waterford, the likes of Gavin Houlihan here, they've all spoken about Alan Reynolds, or Rennie as they call him, as such a man manager and a real manager that puts his arm around the players and just gives them a great boost in training. So we'll have to see how this affects Waterford, but certainly from everyone here at Between the Stripes LOI podcast, best wishes to Alan Reynolds.
We're going now to Bowes in the Dublin Derby, 1-1 at home to Shamrock Rovers. So there was an early possibility of a penalty claim when Dan Carr went down.
Very controversial one. What's your thoughts on that one, John?
I didn't really think it was a penalty.
I know the lads on Soccer Republic were at loggerheads over this one, but yeah. I'd have to agree. I don't think there was enough in it for a penalty for me.
No. It needed a bit more. Needs to be a bit more.
If you want to be ultra cynical about it, you probably should say the Carr should keep his leg there and wait for actual contact instead of anticipating it. But yeah. Look,
there was no booking though. So, no. You know.
So, look, I don't think it was a penalty. So
I don't think the referee knew, to be honest. So that was the. Rob Cornwall shot wide from distance, and Supple made a great save from Graham Burke. You know, that was from the two Ireland players.
Yeah, with Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill in attendance. So that was an interesting little duel there.
What did you make of Dan Byrne? He was very lucky not to get sent off, in my opinion, Kieran. Should have had two yellows.
I like to see common sense from referees. The first one's a definite yellow, and he hacks Graham Burke, down a good 25, 30 yards away from goal. And I think that's the sign of a quality player in terms of Burke. When you see him, he wasn't really going anywhere, but just brought huge panic to the Bowes team. And Byrne feels that he has to go and take him out. The second one, he's totally misjudged the ball, but it's accidental. I know there's no allowances in the rule book for accidental or deliberate, but the referee, I think, could see that he didn't intend to do harm. I know it looked bad, but it was nice of the ref to give him a chance. And Keith Long certainly took advantage of it by taking Byrne off straight away.
I'd have been cross, to be honest. Mm. Yeah, I'd have been really cross. I can understand, you know, Bradley not being happy about that, because it looked to me like he should have gone. One man I love watching when he's on form, Keith Ward. What a pass to Dinny Corcoran. Unfortunately, he was offside, was Corcoran.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to see Corcoran get that one, because he just hasn't really fired this season. And a goal in the Dublin Derby like that just could have turned it all around for him. But as you said, Ward has really stepped up his performances in recent weeks for Bowes.
Yeah, Ronan Finn opened the scoring late on. It was a shot across the goal to make it 1-0. I thought Rovers had it at that stage, Kieran, but they didn't give up. Bowes and Rob Cornwall equalised. Again, a great ball in from Ward.
Yeah, Rovers concede yet another late goal in the Dublin Derby. That leaves them now 3 points behind Derry, but Derry have a game in hand, so pressure is on Stephen Bradley to get some big results in the coming weeks.
Talking about pressure on, we're going to go to Sligo against Limerick. 0-0 draw here, Kieran. Sligo, lack of firepower is causing real problems for them.
Yeah, we're getting a bit boring talking about them being so toothless in attack, John, every week, yeah. But that is the case. Adam Morgan was highlighted as going to be the main man this season. He had a good start to the season, but a lot of his goals came from inside the box. I know people will say that's the sign of a poacher. But his goals, he hasn't scored since March, I think I'm correct in saying now. So where are the goals going to come from the Sligo side?
Are you admitting I know my stuff about Adam Morgan? You were all very excited about him early in the season when he scored those four goals. And I on the show quite said he's not the man.
Yeah, well, I think if he had a bit more service, I certainly think he'd be getting a few more goals, whether he'd light up the division like people thought he would is another case. But there just seems to be no creativity, no flair from this Sligo side. Yeah. And I think you have to look to the manager in that respect, John. Any Sligo guest we've had on here has spoken about the negative approach of this side. They're not winning their home games. That's not a good combination. So Sligo are in banging trouble.
Not scoring any goals neither, Kieran. Serious trouble. And you know, he's got to be coming under some pressure at this stage. A word on Limerick, though. I thought they looked a lot better of an attacking unit than Sligo. They hit the bar twice. King Coleman first and Daniel Kearns from a free. And really, Limerick should have won this.
Oh, that was a superb effort from Kearns. Of course, the former Sligo man, so it would have been interesting to see him get one against his former club. Keane Coleman, another man you mentioned there, he's been an inspirational signing after coming up from the First Division with Cove. Limerick, I think the general consensus on Limerick is head-to-head against Sligo, they look to have the better squad, they look to have a bit more flair about them. It's going to be interesting now. I think the summer window will decide a lot in terms of who's going to get themselves out of that playoff position. Sligo, you'd imagine, probably have more funds than Limerick, but
one thing's for sure, they'll both be praying that Bray stay on this losing streak.
Yeah, definitely. Sligo just, though, in terms of the size of the club, they should be doing a lot better, but they've been on the slide in recent years now. And one man who had great success at Sligo, of course, was Alan Keane. And we're going to be joined on the line now by the league winner. Of course, he had major cup success at Sligo as well and picked up a league title at Dundalk. So here's our interview with Alan Keane. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted to be joined on the line now by a man that can only be described as a serial trophy winner. 7 major honours in his career, 322 appearances for 4 clubs, 22 goals. It's, of course, Alan Keane. Alan, you're very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Cheers, delighted to be on. I'm delighted for you to have me.
Alan, I suppose we'll go back to the start of your career. You started out at your local club, Galway United, in 2005 and stayed there till 2008. But I suppose it was Sligo Rovers where you really made your name, went on to win 6 major honours there. But what were the emotions at the time of your move from Galway to Sligo, obviously considered as local rivals?
Yeah, it was kind of a strange one. Jeff Kinney had just left to go to St. Pat's and I had gone to Australia and was planning to go for a while. And I just happened to get a call, which turned on my phone really by accident in January while I was over there. And I heard this Gauss accent on the phone and it was Paul Cook and asked me would I be interested in signing. And to be honest with you, I wanted to stay kind of at Galway. I was enjoying myself. I was getting set to be injury free. You know, I had a kind of a disastrous start between broken legs and stuff like that in Galway. So it was one of them. I always wanted to play under Paul Cook as well, but because he was with Sligo, it was kind of a strange one. But things didn't materialise at Galway then, so Paul Cook seemed to be wanting me more than what Ian Foster at the time. He was over, took over Galway. So I came down and literally Paul Cook sold the club to me and the rest is history, I suppose.
Of course, that unmistakable Scouse accent, and it's been an incredible couple of years for Paul Cook. Could you ever envisage the success he's gone on to have in English football?
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, he's one of the best man managers I've worked under. He's his man management skills is second to none, and anyone that has played under him, I'm sure, would echo the same thing, because the way he handles every single player and knows what to do with every player, you know, some players need a cuddle, others need a rocket, and he just knew how to I suppose gel the team, and he knew what type of players suits the club as well, you know. And he just what he done was superb, and he's gone on now, and he'll be playing straight in the championship next year, and I think he'll still keep going further and further, you know, and I think he'll get a big move eventually to a big team.
It was, of course, Paul Cook that set the ball rolling, so to speak, at Sligo with those cup victories. But it was Ian Barraclough that came in then and lifted Sligo to the first league title in a very, very long time. And of course, you went on to win it again then with Dundalk in 2016. But in terms of Ian Barraclough, I suppose his career maybe hasn't skyrocketed to the same extent as Paul Cook. Could you put that down to any reason? What was the main differences in terms of working with Paul as to Ian?
Yeah, there were two different type of guys, really. Ian was more kind of laid-back, quite lad, done his attention to detail, second to none. Probably his man management wasn't as good as Cookie's, and probably, to be honest with you, we were probably just spoiled with Paul Cook, you know, and the character that he was. Ian came in and he done excellent, like, you know, games that we probably would have drawn, probably lost on the Paul Cook, like, we drew under Ian Barraclough, and he... you know, he got us over the line, and I know people go back and say, "Oh, it was Paul Cook's team," but ultimately, like, you know, he had to put a team out on the pitch week in, week out, and he was the one that brought us the title, you know. So I know it does be disappointing to hear people say, "Oh, it was Paul Cook's team," this and that, like, but at the end of the day, Ian Barraclough had to come in. He came in and he didn't change too much, but he still changed bits and games that we probably would have went on and lost if we were Paul Cook, and he just, you know, we might have nicked a draw or stuff like that. But his attention to detail was very good on opposition teams, and I'm surprised he actually hasn't gone on. Maybe because he was so quite of a quite kind of guy, maybe that's something that maybe held him back a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny you should actually say about the perception that people say, well, it was Paul Cook's team. It's the same thing down here in Longford. People always say that the FAI Cup success that Longford had in the early noughties was Stephen Kenny's team, even though it was Alan Matthews, our other guest tonight, that was the man in charge at the time. So it's funny how that does work. But in terms of management, you've worked under, obviously, Paul and Ian, and then went on to work under Stephen Kenny. So you've learned from the best. Is there any interest from yourself of going into management in the coming years, Alan?
Oh, there is, yeah. Listen, I've done my B badge, and I've gone on now doing my A badge, and definitely something, you know, I've worked under some good managers, excellent managers, like some top-class managers in the League of Ireland, and to have that opportunity was just a privilege, you know, and I've worked under some not-so-great managers, and I'll take some, you know, you'll take something from them as well, you know, you got to learn every side of things, and the game is changing as well from the time since I played. You know, it's starting to evolve a little bit differently. You know, younger lads need, I suppose, a little bit more attention than I suppose what we did back in the time. And it's changing, I suppose, fitness wise and all that kind of stuff as well. So definitely, yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do, is go into management side of things. And the coaching, it's something where I get my thrill now out of, you know, from the football. I do miss it the odd time, and then when I do the coaching and stuff like that, I get me buzz from that.
As I mentioned, you went on to play for Dundalk, and you made 5 appearances there, of course, as Dundalk went on to claim yet another league title and that incredible European run which you were part of. You came out of retirement, I suppose, at the request of Stephen Kenny. At that stage in your career, was there a temptation to try and stay another year? You made a big impact, I have to say, during your short time at Oriel Park.
Yeah, listen, I was happily retired. I had met Stephen down at one of the Sligo Rovers games, and he kind of had a word with me, and he said, "Keep yourself fit, you never know what's around the corner," you know, and I was like, I was keeping myself fit anyway, and then, you know, I remember being in Dundalk at a wedding, and I seen Dundalk qualifying for the Europa League, and I was like, geez, that's great, and it was funny enough. 2 days later, I got a call off Stephen Kenny on a Sunday morning, and, you know, he asked me to sign, and you know, it was a no-brainer, really. I went up and I played a friendly, and he got a look at me, and he was happy enough, and it was funny enough that I missed the last 6 games of Sligo Rovers, and we went on to win the league through injury, and 4 years later, after retirement, I got to play the last 5-6 games with Dundalk in the running for the league title. So it was a great buzz, and, you know, Stephen came to me and he asked me would I sign again the following year. And he just said it straight out, you know. He says, "You'll sign, it'll probably be like the way I signed, it'll be kind of as cover again and stuff like that." And I suppose I didn't really, I kind of still hadn't, I got the buzz back for football, but I wasn't really, I suppose, willing to move my family up for a year and be just sitting on the bench, because I'm not that type of lad where I'm just sitting on the bench and taking a wage. I prefer to be playing. And, obviously, I had the fire service in the pipeline as well down here in Sligo, so I knew if I signed, that might be a little bit of an issue of getting into the fire service. So In turn, I got a call off Crusaders, which was ideal. I ended up going to Crusaders from January till May, and that took me over till I got into the fire service here.
Yeah, as you said there, you finished up at Crusaders, and it seems to be something we're seeing a lot more from experienced League of Ireland players. They seem to be winding down their career in the Northern League. Did you enjoy your time there, and why do you feel that's becoming a more attractive option for experienced League of Ireland players?
I suppose it's probably because it's part-time. I would say I never envisioned myself going up playing up the North, but when I got the phone call, I was out of work with Dundalk, and I had that kind of period, five months without whether it was a job or not. So it was ideal. I just had to travel up for games, really, and they put me up in a hotel, and look, I was winding down the clock, and I enjoyed my time at Crusaders. It wasn't as expected, you know. I couldn't give as good as I could give, you know. I don't think that the love was there anymore, and it's tough when you just travel up for games. It's tough to feel part of a team and feel, I suppose, the affections of the crowd and stuff. It's just, you feel like you're robbing a wage, really, if I'm being honest with you. You know, you're going up, picking up your wage, playing a game and coming home. So it was something I kind of was a little bit, I suppose, embarrassed about. But I suppose at the end of the day, that's the contract they'd set out for me. So I wasn't going to argue.
Finally, Alan, your former club, Sligo, really struggling in recent seasons. Again, this year, down towards the relegation playoff position. Have you been keeping close tabs on the bit of red this year?
I have, yeah. I've done a couple of radio commentary on the games, and to be honest with you, it doesn't look too good. And like, you know, I'm kind of worried for them now. The lack of scoring goals, and I suppose the squad there's a good bit of youth in it, and I just fear if they're in a relegation battle, it'll be a tough ask for them, especially with a lot of inexperienced lads there. And I just think maybe they need three or four League of Ireland players, if I'm being honest, lads that have played in the league and know the league inside out. I don't think that it works with this these loaning lads in and coming from academies and stuff like that. I think they haven't been challenged, and they don't realise how good this league actually is, and I think they get a shock when they come here, and I just think they need to get back to winning ways. And I just fear, I look at the fixtures they have coming up before the break, and I don't really know where they're going to get the win from, and I haven't been excited by them at all this year. And it's tough going watching games, you know, because it's such a great little club and great support, and to see, I suppose, fans being so angry after games week in, week out, it's not good, you know. And hopefully they'll get there. Hopefully Gerard will sign two or three players, or if not four. I think they're short about four good experienced lads, and I think they'll do all right then. But there's, make no bones about it, they're in a relegation battle this year, and hopefully they can stay clear of it and not go down, because it'll be a disaster for the club if they do go down.
And definitely no chance of Alan Keane putting the boots back on.
No, the only boots I have on this weather now is the fire boots. That's it, you know. And no, listen, I've had a good career. I'm thankful to all the teams I've had and the fans that have been there. And listen, I look back and I have no regrets, which is, I always had it in my head, you know, before, when I finished it. I look back and have no regrets. And I suppose look back and a time that I finished myself, you know, not being forced to finish, you know. So I always wanted to finish on my terms, and I suppose I got to do that, and I'm very happy for that.
Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thanks very much for joining us, and best wishes.
No problem at all, Kieran. It was a pleasure.
Cheers, Alan.
Enjoying the show so far? Why not leave us a review on iTunes? Want something featured on next week's show? Get in touch via Twitter at Between Stripes, or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our new website address is www.betweenthestripes.ie. Enjoy the second half.
So that is our Premier Division results roundup for now. John, we're moving on to the First Division.
Yeah, we're going to start at Wexford, where they held Harps to a 1-1 draw. Good result that for Wexford.
Yeah, only Wexford 8th point of the season, so a very good result for them. Harps really struggling for goals this season. They only have a goal difference of 4 at the moment. So major goal scoring issues there, John.
Yeah, but then again, it's so tight up at the top, Kieran, that you know, a draw instead of a win, it doesn't really damage them too much. Dean Kelly for Wexford and Paddy McCourt with a penalty to equalise for Harps.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about the good young potential at Wexford this season, and Dean Kelly was certainly one of the players highlighted, so good to see him starting to get a few goals now.
Big match at Galway where Drogheda emerged with 3 points.
Yeah, you would imagine losing a home game to a fellow promotion rival could be described as extremely damaging. But when you look at the table then, John, Galway still only finding themselves 5 points off the top and with the game in hand on UCD, who's starting to just fall back a little bit in recent weeks. And they're only 3 points behind Drogheda after that result. So it's just so tight in the first division at the moment.
It is. One team that's up there and performing really well, they're still... I still think they'll do it. It's Shells 3-0 at Cove. Great result.
Yeah, they were your title prediction at the start of the season. Mm. Everyone knows Shells are a very direct side. But look, as we said at the start of the year, when Davey O'Sullivan came in there, he was going to be the focal point. He didn't score this weekend, so it's positive to see other players chipping in there. And in James English, who got a brace in this game, they certainly have a good talent there too.
Yeah, and I'm not going to make any jokes about James Brown getting third. Now, we'll move on from that one. Cabin Teely beat UCD 2-0. Real surprise this one, Kieran.
Yeah, so as I said, UCD just seemed to be falling back a little bit in recent weeks. And I know from listening to interviews Colly O'Neill has done, this is exam time, John, for the students, and it really does put a lot of pressure and demands on them. Maybe we're just starting to see the results of that now. Jack Watson and Luke Lucas with Cabin Healy's goals.
Yeah, is it any relation to Sam, do you know? Or?
I don't think so.
No, okay. I just wonder with a surname, Kieran, and I thought you'd know. Look, final match, one which I was at, Athlone 1, Longford 1, bitterly disappointing match, really poor performance from Longford. It was Aaron Brilley that opened the scoring. Neat finish from Free, second point of the season. Chris Mulhall got the equaliser, but he was sent off later in the match. They're going to be without him for a match.
Yeah, so for once I actually missed the game, John, but I did watch the highlights put together by Longford Town. I have to say, in terms of online presence, I think Longford are the most improved club in either division. Their social media game has really picked it up. Online highlights, video interviews, just fantastic coverage at the moment. So I was able to see what I missed out on at loan. I actually felt I was one of the few that felt Mulhall probably did deserve to go. What was your views on it?
I didn't really see it, to be honest. It was a bit of a tussle. He looked to be clambering over the player, but I didn't see any. There was an indication of a stamp or something similar, but I didn't see it, Kieran. But look, you know, 1-1 isn't good enough. I think there's pressure coming on Fenn now. He's lucky that the division's so close, because in other seasons with teams that are running away with it, you know, they wouldn't be 9 points with a game in hand behind the league leaders at this stage. I think there'd be far more pressure on. You know, I like the way he plays, but they were just all at sixes and sevens.
We're talking about the likes of Finn Harps and Galway as underperforming at the moment, John. Yet Finn Harps find themselves 2 points ahead of Longford. Galway find themselves 4 ahead of Longford. And those two teams meet now on Friday night, which is a huge game for Finn and his players. But for me, I feel the players aren't doing enough. Fenn's come in, he's set out his stall. We all know how he's going to play. We said at the start of the season they would concede goals because of that. But of late, the defending has not been down to that style of play. It's just been poor defending. Silly goals been conceded. Goalkeeping errors. Obviously, Jack Brady's come in now, and hopefully he'll grab that number one shirt with both hands. But it's up front where the big problem is. Chris Mulhall not doing enough for me, John.
No, he's not. And I'm still not 100% sure he's fully fit.
No, he's not. No.
So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how Longford get on without him this next match. I think Fenn will go with Dean Byrne up top and maybe play Virgil.
Well, that's what we're not going to ramble on too long on Longford now, but that's what the fans are calling out for weeks and weeks and weeks. Dean Byrne, I mean, I was at the game in Talla against Shamrock Rovers. I know it was only the League Cup, but Dean Byrne led the line in that game as opposed to playing in the number 10 where he has most of the season. And he was absolutely superb and ran the Rovers back four ragged. That's something you don't get with Mulhall. He's just so static. There's no movement from him. Very easy to mark. I think Mulhall likes more of a direct game, whereas that's not Fenn's game. So it's very strange to me that Mulhall is playing every week.
Yeah. But anyway, the goal for Athlone came from Aaron Brilley, and you spoke to him earlier.
Yeah, we're going to hear from the Athlone Town hero now, of course, a former Longford Town man. And I think you were saying he gave it a little bit of socks for the celebration.
Oh, he did, yeah. He had a point to prove.
Yeah, so we'll ask him now if he felt maybe there was a point to prove. And this is our interview with Aaron Brilley. So we're joined on the line now by Athlone Town player Aaron Brilley. Aaron and his teammates had a fantastic result against Longford in the derby last Friday, a 1-1 draw at Lizzie Wood. And Aaron, you're welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Karen. Thanks very much, Rob.
So, Aaron, as I said just there, Athlone with their second point of the season, and importantly, it came in the Midlands Derby, which is, I'm sure, always nice from an Athlone Town perspective. You got your first goal as well for Athlone, so a good weekend all round.
Yeah, look, I think in the last couple of weeks there, I think the lads become a lot more solid there in the last couple of weeks. Our back four have been terrific for us, and just Terry and Mitch have come in the last, say, 6 weeks and sort of instilled a bit of a confidence in us, just sort of go and express ourselves to get back to enjoy it. I think it came to a point there for a while where we were sort of going out and we were a little bit dejected before the start of the games even, and it was nearly inevitability about us going out and getting beaten and all the rest of it. But I think now in the last couple of weeks, and anybody who's seen us play UCD and Drogheda especially, and obviously Longford at the weekend, it's certainly a project to begin to come together that little bit more. There's a bit of a unity coming about the team, and hopefully we can crack on. And I suppose on a personal note, it was nice for me to get off the market. It took me long enough to get off the mark now, right? But it was nice to get, especially in the Midlands Derby, in a game that means so much to people down there.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's been quite a big turnaround under Terry Butler. He's only been in there a few weeks since Aaron Cannon left, so surely there can't be that much of a tactical change and stuff on the training ground. Has it been more of a mentality thing where he's come in, he's put his arm around maybe the younger players in the dressing room, and we're seeing the results of that now?
Yeah, I suppose, like you say, from a tactical point of view, there's been minor adjustments, but nothing that's been astronomical, really. Like it's little things, and sort of it's been more really, like you say, about putting your arm around him and just sort of instilling a little bit of confidence in us. Like Terry's very much a no-nonsense manager, like, you know what I mean, in the way he does things. But since the start of the season, the lads have been putting on a good session, especially there, and I think just in the last couple of weeks we finally got that mentality about us where we're actually going and being a young team and enjoying it and expressing ourselves a little bit more, and it's starting to show in our performance, like in comparison to the start of the year. And what we're doing now, it's completely different. I mean, we're just hoping now that, like, we're very much alive to the fact that we're not going to win the league around, but in the next couple of weeks, especially coming into the break and afterwards, then we're hoping to kick on that a little bit more and climb that table a little bit and get as many points on the board as we can. Like, we go out every week and nobody really expects us to do anything, but look, we're working hard in the training pitch, and we're hoping to put that into results like we had at the weekend going forward.
It's a very young dressing room at Athlone. A lot of players don't have League of Ireland experience there, so to speak. In fact, it's probably fair to say that you'd be one of the most experienced players in terms of League of Ireland, having played for Longford and Cabinteely in the past, and obviously you've played with Newry as well. Just in terms of your past at Longford, did you feel you had a point to prove going out at the weekend? Because a lot of Longford fans feel that you maybe were harshly let go from the club.
Look, when I was at Longford, I was quite young in terms of being let go beforehand. Look, it didn't work out. At the time, I did felt maybe that I was a little bit unlucky not to stay on for a little bit longer. But after that, I went on and I went with Cabinteely, and I played 50-odd games for them. And like I say, I played for Newry and teams like that as well. So maybe since going, it was nearly a blessing for me, because I could have probably stayed there for an extra year and not got that first team experience that I did get when I went elsewhere. So look, If I felt it was though I was unlucky not to get it, I tried to prove myself every week, really. There was no grudges held against Longford in any way or anything like that, just because I was let go. That's what happens in football. But don't get me wrong, it was nice to go and score my first goal in that Midlands Derby, especially down at Lone. It was a nice moment for me, like, but like I say, not just because it was against Longford, but it was a nice goal for me to score first off the bat. Hopefully it can be something that can kickstart our season now going forward.
Athlone's only other point this season came against Finn Harps. You have Harps again on Friday. Confidence must be high now after this Longford result. You confident of maybe going and getting a first victory of the season now?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think at the start of the season, everybody thought sort of Harps was going to be a very intimidating place to go to start, but they haven't got maybe the results that they've been looking for in the last couple of weeks. They drew Westford there at the weekend. Like you say, we've already taken a point off them at home. So, look, we're going to go into every game confident now. We've played everybody once or twice, and now since we've settled down, especially in the second phase of the game, we feel as though that we can play against anybody. Like, you know what I mean, it's a young team, but the best thing about a young team is once you get a little bit of confidence, it hopefully will come out a little bit further, where you're playing with that sort of no-fear attitude, especially with people not having too many expectations for us. It nearly sits ideally for us. People are going to think that we're going to go out and get beat. I'm sure they'll think the very same this weekend, but there's an inner confidence within ourselves now at the minute that we're hoping to go and prove people around them. So
I have to say, Aaron, it's great to hear you speaking so positively, and it is great to see an upturn in form in recent weeks at Athlone, because I have to say, at the start of the season, they didn't seem competitive, and it was kind of dragging down the league. As there were one or two other teams in the first division, I feel maybe that they're just dragging it down, but it's great to see Athlone now, and even Wexford picking up results in the last few weeks and really making things more competitive. But in terms of the off-field matters at the club, has that been a distraction at all for the players?
No, to be honest, Kieran, I don't think so, and people think that
as players that we have an obligation to say something like that, but not really. Like as young players, that was something that we try to stay away from. Like we continue to train. It's mainly the mainstay management team that's there in terms of Aaron and Terry and people like that there. So look, in football we look at it, players come and players go, managers do the same. So as footballers playing at a level that we're playing at next and focus purely on your football, that now especially since everything has settled down in the last couple of weeks, I think that's starting to show now, where there is certainly a bit more of a unity. There's a bit more sort of a, maybe I'm not going to say a set team, but there's a little bit more of a structure to it where we're getting used to playing with each other. Because at the start of the season, like we were sort of 5, 6, 7 weeks outside everybody else by the time we actually got our squad settled and finalised now. So now that we're sort of getting up to the pace, and a few of the lads, like you said before, who haven't played in the league are getting used to the tempo, and it's not quite the same as maybe where they've played before. It's starting to come together nicely now. So hopefully, like I say, kick-started with that result last week, and then hopefully against Finn Harps and then Cavitini on Monday.
Well, Aaron, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on things closely at the next few weeks of that loan. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks very much for having me, Kieran.
Cheers, Aaron.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
Now we'll just look ahead to the First Division fixtures at the weekend, Kieran, and we're going to start with UCD against Cove.
Yeah, so this is a big one for UCD after that surprising defeat against Cavitini. That was their third defeat of the season. Cove Ramblers' first defeat in 3 in all competitions last time out against Shells. That was obviously after Stephen Henderson's resignation and then U-turn, so interesting to see how they bounce back from that. Cove have the third worst defensive record in the division. Only Wexford and that lone have worse. They do have a decent away record, 3 wins from 7. Only the top two sides have more, but it's the lack of a goal scorer that is the real issue for Cove. Keane Leonard is their top scorer at the moment with 4 goals. You compare that to Georgie Kelly, who has 10. I can only see this going one way. That's a UCD win.
Yeah, back to form for UCD for me. Shells are at home to Wexford, and again, I'm going to plump for a home win here. I can't see anything apart from a home win. I know Wexford got a draw last week, but home win for me.
Yeah, so I should mention, obviously, St Mel's Brewery prediction game. It's that time of the week again. John, you have a 3-0 lead after our most recent show. So I've gone for UCD in the first game. You're gone for UCD. You're going for Shells. And I'm going for a 3-0 Shells win. They're unbeaten in their last 6 games. And they won the previous meeting 1-0 in March. So, yeah, a Shells win for me.
Drogheda at home to Cavitini. Cavitini just not performing this season as well as we thought they might. But I think the 15 points so far, I can't see anything but a draw had a win.
Yeah, well, as we mentioned, they did have that 2-0 win over UCD last time out, but the major issue for Cavitini, there's just absolutely no consistency about them. They have not had back-to-back wins this season. Only Cove and Athlone have scored less, 11 goals in 13 for Cabo. That's not good enough. Kieran Marty Waters just hasn't arrived this season at all. They're not bad defensively. They've only conceded 18 and 13, but Drogheda have just blown the division away in terms of goals. 34 this season. It's the most in the division. And for me, it's a Drogheda win.
Longford host Galway. This will be a match that we'll both be at, no doubt. Longford will be without Chris Mulhall, but you seem to think that might be turned to our advantage.
No harm at all, John. From what I've seen of Galway, I don't really think they're as good as people were hoping they would be this season. A couple of their players that have questions over their fitness levels, despite them being the only full-time team in the division. So I think Byron could give their defenders a bit of a runaround. Longford, they haven't won a home in their last 3. Galway have the best home record in the division, but on the road, they actually have the fourth worst record. So that's a chink of light for Longford there. The draw against Athlone was unacceptable, but it's the poor finishing and silly defending that's costing Longford. They need to cut that out. They have a huge game against Harps on the bank holiday Monday. I think most people would accept 4 points from the next 2 games. It was a 0-0 draw the last time these 2 teams met. I think there's just so much on the line for both teams here. We could see quite a cagey affair. I'm going to call this one a draw.
Well, I think Longford will win it because I think his Fenn's handle be forced, and they've got to do better than they did against
Athlone. That means Longford definitely won't win.
Thanks. And finally, Harps at home to Athlone. Now, Athlone with a point against Longford. Can you see them getting anything at Harps?
Well, their other point came against Harps. It was a 1-1 draw. So both the results this season, 1-1 draws. No points on the road yet this season for Athlone, crucially. But there's been a huge improvement under Terry Butler, as we heard from Aaron Brilley there moments ago. But to travel to Donegal with an amateur squad, it's a big ask. And despite Harps struggling to score goals. I think they just have enough quality in their side to scrape this. I'm going to say a 1-0 win for Harps. But John, just on Harps, doesn't seem to be right there at the moment.
No, they're not. They're not firing on all cylinders. You could say that the win against Longford was lucky. That was what the match I saw them against. And yeah, it's just not quite right. But then again, Kieran, it's so tight up there. They're still within, you know, pouncing distance of the top.
I know from speaking to Harps fans, they're very critical of the style of play of Ollie Horgan at the moment. They've only scored 15 goals in 13 First Division games. And when you consider the firepower they have in that squad, they should be doing a lot better. From what I've seen, they're operating with a 4-3-3 formation at the moment. And the likes of Michael O'Connor have found himself out wide when he should be the focal point of that attack. Mm. And it remains to be seen whether Michael O'Connor will actually stay at the club beyond the summer. He's only on loan, you have to remember, from Shamrock Rovers. So I think failure to win this game would raise major questions regarding Ollie Horgan's future at the club. But for me, as I said, they should have enough to be at loan. I'm going for a 1-0 win. What's your prediction?
Oh yeah, I think it'll be simply enough, 3-0. Just quickly mention that there is a full set of fixtures on Bank Holiday Monday. I'm not going to go and make predictions for these. We'll just run you through them. Harps are at home to Longford Town, so that'll be one match again we're going up to. Mm-hmm. Shells will play Drogheda. That should be a cracker, two teams nearer the top. Cabo against Athlone, and finally Cove at home to Galway.
Okay, folks, that rounds up our First Division coverage. We're going to move along now to the Premier Division.
And we'll kick off with Limerick against Bohemians.
Yeah, so Bohs, despite all their praise for their good football and despite that late goal in the Dublin derby, they find themselves in a bit of trouble at the moment, down in 7th, only 3 points clear of Limerick. Limerick, as you said, will be hoping that Bray just keep up this losing streak, because Limerick have only won 1 in 10 home games. That is an appalling home record. Bohs on the road, 3 wins from 9, not the worst record in the world. I think I'd have to go for a Bohs win.
Yeah, I agree. I've gone for a away win with that one too. So we're in agreement again, Kieran. Now this is a massive match. Shamrock Rovers at home to Dundalk.
Yeah, Rovers, listen to this, John. Only 3 wins in their last 14 across all competitions. That is not good enough for Shamrock Rovers.
Wow, that's a terrible start for them.
However, they are unbeaten in their last 4, amazingly. So, bit of hope there. They've only had 1 win over Dundalk in Talla since 2013, so that's not quite encouraging. Kevin Horgan out injured at the moment. Chinchinski, we know he's a liability, and we've seen the Champions League final, what a dodgy goalkeeper can do for a team, so question marks over him again this weekend. In terms of Dundalk, 6-match winning streak in all competitions. Their last defeat came on the 4th of May, so they've almost gone 2 months without a defeat now. Patrick Hoban, top scorer in the league with 14 goals. Do you feel he's good enough for the Ireland squad, John? Because that's something a lot of Dundalk fans are raising at the moment.
Well, I suppose it depends. I mean, Ireland play, they tend to play with that one up front, don't they? Mm. Very direct, you know, and it would suit a direct game, but there's no harm having him in and around the squad.
Mm. Duffy, McGrath and Hoare, I have to say, have been the most improved players in the league this season.
Mm.
Dundalk's 2 defeats, both came on the road. They were against Cork and Waterford, so 2 of the top sides. If Rovers want to prove themselves as a top side, they're going to have to win this one. I can't see it. The first meeting between these sides was a 0-0 draw, and I think we might see a similar result here. I'm going to opt for a draw.
Okay, well, I'm going to go for a Dundalk win on this one, and more pressure to be heaped on Stephen Bradley. We'll look at Derry against Sligo next. Jekyll and Hyde Derry, great at home, terrible away from home. At home to Sligo, who are in dire straits.
Yeah, 2 out of 4 sides here, John. Derry's last 3, 2 defeats and a win. Sligo, 2 draws and a loss, so neither side in good form. Interesting for Derry, we always think of them, Kenny Shees has been quite a good organisational manager, but in their last 3 defeats, they've shipped 13 goals, so that's a worry. But on the flip side of that, Sligo just not scoring goals at the moment. Derry fantastic at the Brandywell. I think I'd have to go for another home win.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going for a home win. All sorts of pressure on Sligo at the moment, and I can't see it getting any easier going up to the Brandywell. Cork host Waterford.
Game of the weekend?
Yeah, oh, well, yeah. I mean, Rovers against Dundalk is a cracker. Mm. This is also a cracker, so hard to... and we've got a Dublin derby still to talk about. Well, Braby, sort of Dublin. Cork against Waterford, Kieran.
Get your map out, John.
Oh, I know.
Anyway, in terms of Cork and Waterford, Cork in red hot form, 3 wins in a row, 4 in their last 5. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Sadlier is really getting back to his best. And I think that's important because Cummins' goals have really dried up from the start of the season, the form he was in. But listen to this for home form, John. Cork, 8 wins from 8, best in the division. Although I do think they're going to be tested here. Waterford obviously beat a very poor Derry side 4-0 last time out. But they only have 1 win in 6 in all competitions. They did beat Cork in that battle at the RSC 2-1. Vigoro's last game, so he's going to be looking to put in a big performance, and we have to see how they react to the obviously the absence of Alan Reynolds from the sideline. I think with that home form, Cork are just going to scrape this one. I'm going to say 2-1 to Cork.
Yeah, I agree for a Cork win there, but it will be quite narrow. I'd say maybe 2-0, something like that. Finally, Bray host St. Pat's.
Yeah, so as we mentioned on the show, there's the issue allegedly over unpaid wages. We'll have to see if any more comes out of that before this game on Friday. Huge injury crisis. This is the last chance Salou, in all honesty, for Bray. They find themselves 9 behind Limerick. If that's to become 12 before their mid-season break, I can't see any sort of revival from Bray, especially with the finances of the club. They're just not going to have the money to bring in players. Back-to-back defeat for St. Pat's, but if they win this one, they would go to 3 wins in their last 6, which is quite a good record. Chance to move into the top 4 as well, interestingly, John. Pat's lead 7-1 on aggregate from the last 2 meetings this season against Bray. It's hard to see anything other than a Pats win, especially when you consider Pats have won 40 of the last 65 meetings against Bray Wanderers. Pats win for me.
Yeah, with that massive injury list that Bray have as well, I can't see anything but a Pats win. So there is one match on Monday, Kieran. Cork host Derry.
Yeah, we won't give predictions for that one because we'll have to see what happens over Friday night. But another big game for Cork, and it's a huge spell for them if they're to try and regain this lead at the top of the table.
And finally, we have got a final interview for you.
Yeah, this is an absolute belter, folks. Alan Matthews, of course, a man you will remember. Manager of many League of Ireland clubs, including Longford, Bray, Shelburne, Athlone. I'm sure Cork. I'm missing a few others there. He faced so many financial issues at clubs throughout his career. And he's managed so many great players. Lots of great stories. And he shared them with us a little bit earlier on. So here he is, folks. Enjoy this interview with Alan Matthews. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to be joined on the line now by what can only be described as a veteran League of Ireland manager with great cup success down the years. It's, of course, Alan Matthews. Alan, you're very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
How you doing, Kieran? Glad to be here.
So, Alan, we're going to go back to the very start of your management career. You were assistant at Shelburne, but then your first senior job came in 2002 when you took over at Longford Town. Of course, it was a club on the up at the time, but I don't think anyone could have envisioned the success that you went on to have there, becoming the club's most successful ever manager. 2 FEI Cups back-to-back, and of course a League Cup, and great success in the Premier Division and appearances in Europe. When you took over that job, what was the vision at the time?
The vision was to stay in the league, to be honest with you. We were tipped by everybody to be relegated. The club had just survived relegation on a penalty shootout the previous season, and it was the first year that the league were bringing in the 10-team Premier Division. So we were everybody's favourite to go down, and we didn't go down, and we fought really hard. So the plan was really to stay in the division and be as competitive as we could, which we did. I think we finished 5th that year, which was good, but there was no mid table. You're either up the top end of the table with a couple of results, or if you lost a couple of matches, you were down the bottom. So it was a tough slog, but we survived it. And that was the first year that they brought in summer football as well. So there was a lot of games condensed into a very, very tight period of time.
Yeah, and of course,
the plan coming into the club at that stage was to ensure that we stayed in the division, which we did.
Of course, that's a big issue we're seeing this season with the return to the 10-team league. A lot of player burnout, seems to be a lot of players picking up muscle injuries. Is that something you've noticed from watching? I know, speaking to you earlier, you've said you've been watching a lot of Premier Division football this season.
Yeah, I think it's down to the fixture congestion. Not necessarily to the fact that the lads have been asked to play 33 games or whatever it is, 36 games maybe. But I think it's the way it's been condensed into a very, very tight period of time. And I've already opined on it that this should have been flagged when the fixtures came out back in December. It shouldn't come as a surprise to any of the managers or clubs involved that they were going to be asked to play 2/3 of the season almost to the break. And even the first division, I think after the break, there's only 7 games left. So, you know, you're in no position really to maybe make a change or to bring players in if you're in the first division to try and give yourself a chance to get promotion or whatever. And in the Premier Division, if you're looking to challenge or if you're looking to make a bid to get into the European spots, you've again got 2/3 of the season before you can maybe change and bring extra personnel in. So the burnout part of it, it's a very, very onerous task to play in some cases, I think, 3 games in 20 days, that kind of stuff. And it's been happening consistently. There's a couple of managers have voiced their opinions. I would agree with them, but my belief on this is that, and it should have been addressed earlier on in the league, and I think if the clubs have got collectively together and voiced their opinions, I think things might have been might have been different. May not have been, because again, the FAI will argue that the leagues wanted this, that the clubs rather wanted this, that they didn't want to have an extended season where they would have to pay players for a longer period of time. Mm. We talk about the full-time ethos here. There's only a couple of clubs full-time, predominantly when you combine the First Division and the Premier. It's still part-time football.
Yeah, and of course then there's going to be the issue later in the season where teams have gone out of the cup competitions and European movements as well. There could be teams going a long period of time without a home gate, so it is going to cause problems later in the season. But just moving along, Alan, as we said, you had a good spell at Longford, and you worked for such a small club, really. You worked with some incredible players there. I'm just thinking of the likes of Sean Prunty, Sean Dillon, Alan Kirby, Gary Deegan, Graham Gartland, Dave Mooney and Pat Sullivan, to name a few. Can you pick out the best player you worked with in your time in Longford, or even in League of Ireland in general?
Well, one of the guys that you haven't mentioned there was Philip Keogh, who was absolutely superb for us in the couple of seasons he was there. You never mentioned Shane Barrett, who was terrific for us. Gave us great pace and putting trust in the last third. Barry Ferguson was our captain for, I think, 3-4 seasons there. There was a lot of guys that came and played for Longford that, you know, really did themselves proud, and went on to have careers outside the league with other clubs in the league and progressed. So there's a lot of guys that I would have worked with over the period of time that you would say at that particular era, but in that particular team, they were key men. But when you look at it, there's not one standout, because there was an awful lot of really good lads, great attitude, good around the place, good with supporters, no problem in training. And you're talking about match burnout. In one season there, we had 51 competitive games in a 3-week period, I think it was. And we got on with it and dealt with it. And that was the year we won both cups and finished fourth in the league. So if you have the right attitude, you need a bit of luck with injuries, and you need the right personnel to galvanise each other. So they all played their part over a period of time, over different teams, to bring some good success to the club.
51 games, that's quite incredible, really. Of course, Alan, 2007 was when Longford's spell in the Premier came to an end, sadly. Obviously, there was financial issues there. How tough was it to rally the players in that situation? And of course, that was a situation you'd face at many clubs during your career.
Well, great credit's due to the players, because they picked up enough points to stay in the division. Mm. I think with our points tally achieved, we would have been eighth,
yeah,
in a 12-team league, I think. But they deducted points from us and we got relegated because of administration issues. So that was really disappointing. We finished off the last game of the season, I think, by beating Derry. 3-0 or 3-0.
Yeah, Dave Mooney hat-trick, I think.
We slipped up on a point. We were a point short of Waterford, who stayed up and got beaten, I think, in a playoff. But we got to the cup final that year. So it was really disappointing that we were so severely punished. The club would have done everything they could to facilitate the administration requirements. And I think the league were particularly harsh on us to punish the team by deducting points, and ultimately the club spent, I don't know, 10 years or 9 years in the First Division, and there were financial issues, but it didn't stop the players in trying to produce, and as I said, people worked tirelessly to keep things going, and it was a punishment on everybody's, for everybody, that I think was very, very harsh. And I don't think too many teams have been hit with points for lack of administration or not hitting deadlines in relation to licensing. We got punished, and the club suffered really by going into the wilderness for a number of years in the First Division, which ultimately is what it is. It's nowhere near as prolific or has the same publicity or has the same profile as the Premier Division, and that was the take. And as I said, on that particular year, we also got to a cup final. So the footballing end of it, and from what we could control, everybody did what they could, and it was the league who decided to punish Longford harshly, in my opinion, and we ended up getting relegated.
Yeah, and again, when you think back to that 2007 side, the players that were in it, there's players there as a squad that, if that was to be in the Premier Division now, it probably would do quite well.
You'd be okay. I think Dave Mooney came with me to Cork. We gave a few quid. He subsequently moved on to Reading, was been in England for 10 years, forged out a good career for himself. You've Gary Deegan, again, has gone over to England and has been over there for the last, I think, 9 years now, played in England and Scotland. Sean Prunty, unfortunately, went full-time and then due to health issues, and he couldn't play. With a lot of guys that played, Desi Baker went on and won the league Shamrock Rovers and played against, you know, the Tottenham in the group stages of the Europa League. A lot of guys went and played on from Longford after the 2007 season. Pat Sullivan came with me from Longford to Cork, got player of the year, and Cork went on to Rovers, scored a wonder goal against, I think it was Partizan Belgrade in Europe, and again, had great success with Rovers. So they pushed on and moved on well. So there was good lads throughout my period in the first period at Longford. There was good lads there throughout the teams that we built up. And they've all progressed into various different areas of the game, and some of them are still playing, which is great.
And as you said, you moved on to Cork then. We all know what happened there off the field, unfortunately. But considering everything that did go on, how proud of you are you of that 2008 Satanta Cup success? Of course, it was the first All-Ireland Cup in Cork City's history.
It was great to win it. We got deducted 10 points. We went into administration, went to an examiner's great footballing town and great footballing city, and people got behind us. What happened off the pitch was scandalous. I went in full of hope and real enthusiasm that we could push on, and as a manager, it was a great opportunity for me. My employers, Ulster Bank, gave me a career break, so I committed to it fully, and we went down to Cork, and it was, from a football point of view, it was brilliant. But the club just, it absolutely imploded. There was no real substance to the people who were running it. And that's when Forrest evolved and came together. When I left, when I was dismissed, the new chairman came in. He wouldn't keep me. Wouldn't even acknowledge that individual by name, because what he did to the football club was scandalous. And they ended up being relegated and folding, and he got struck off, and it just went from one catastrophe to the next. Thankfully, I wasn't there. But when I was there, and we had Joe Gamble, Colin Healy, Dan Murray, Neil Horgan, Dave Mooney, Pat Sullivan, we had some really, really good seasoned professionals. David Moyler was with us, and young, hungry players who wanted to do well. And that Satanta Cup victory was really, really a good time and a special time. And the guys that are there, a lot of them, as I said, have pushed on and done other things in the game. Their professionalism was top class, and it was a joy to be involved from a football point of view. From an admin and a kind of a back office point, it was a disaster.
And of course then, Shelburne 2011, an incredible season for yourself, promotion from the First Division and an FAI Cup final appearance as a First Division side. And I was at that Cup final against Sligo. It was a fantastic game of football. My main memory from it was the incredible individual performance of Philly Hughes up front for the Reds.
Philly Hughes, Andy Boyle, Stephen Paisley, David Cassidy. You can go through a lot of those players that were playing for Shells that day. Stephen Paisley got man of the match. Philly scored. He was excellent. He was excellent for us that season. Philly signed, and he played two seasons for us, and he scored 48 goals in two seasons. I'll always maintain that we were robbed in that cup final. The referee didn't referee a game of football subsequent to that final. We were 1-0 up. He sent off Barry Clancy for simulating, which how he came up to that decision is beyond me. Instead of giving us a penalty and even giving Gavin Pearce a red card, he sent off our player. And then to really rub salt into the wounds, and we've seen recently with the Irish under-17s over in England, he didn't apply the rule of goalkeeper off your line as fairly as he should have. And the Sligo keeper, who'd done it the previous year against Rovers, became the hero, made a couple of saves, and we lost the cup. And it's a sore point, because that would have changed the direction Shelburne would have been able to take. We'd got promoted, we'd been promoted with 4 or 5 games to go. We lost the league to Cork in injury time the week before that, and it was very disappointing, but the key was to get promotion. So what we had to look forward to was the cup final, and we tried to pick the lads up, and we did. The players were magnificent on that day, and they put in such an effort. And we really felt we were harshly treated. We played, I think, an hour. Was it an hour? I'm not trying to think. With 10 men, because Barry Clancy was sent off around half an hour. So the game went to extra time, and we were up against full-time opposition. And players left everything. But Shelburne, the club, could have gone in a different direction had we won the cup, had European football. But no regrets. Football, you have good days and bad days, and you can look back on them all with fond memories, some with regret, but with fond memories on every occasion.
is there a slight disappointment how it ended at Shelburne the next season? That things just didn't really seem to take off after that great promotion.
Well, it was the year after that. No, we went 2012. We were fine.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah,
we got to the semi-final of the FAI Cup, and that's when some of the noises from off the terraces were less than what I would be comfortable in working in. And we were beaten by Derry, who went on to win the Cup that year in the semi-final. We'd finished the season very, very well. We were in the top half of the division all along. I think we finished fifth or sixth. We didn't get Setanta Cup, which was the goal. But we had a very strong season. But the real key was that going into 2013 season, the budget was cut by 43%. And I've learned now that if clubs cut budgets and want to try and go a different direction, it's very hard to keep players and to attract players. So we lost a lot of players, a lot of key players, moved on, went to other clubs, and I start getting some, I don't mind getting stick, if it's in football, you get that. But I got some things thrown at me and said that were coming from a source that was quite close to the club, and I felt uncomfortable with it, and it wasn't addressed, and it got worse as the season progressed in 2013. And after about 10, 11 games, I just said, no, I'm not putting myself, not myself is okay, but not my family through this. So I decided to call her a day, and I left with all my staff because we moved together. And the club ultimately got relegated, and they're stuck in the first division since.
Mm-hmm. And from there, Alan, you had spells then at Bray and Athlone. Again, there was issues off the field there that you had no control over. And that's quite a good few years ago now, and yet this week we're hearing headlines again that Bray players may have gone unpaid. We all know what's happened at Lone in recent seasons.
One thing that I'm glad of, we had a really good season in Bray in 2014, where very, very tight budget. I was asked to come in, put together a team, and we stayed out of trouble all the way, and we're never in danger of being relegated. We were a bit of a wobble midway through the season with a lot of injuries. We got back on track and didn't end up in trouble. The key again was to try and stay in the division. But people came into the club, and what we thought was going to be a positive, rather than committing myself and saying anything that I may regret, I'll just say, look at the history of the club since then.
Mm.
I don't know how many managers they've had. I don't know how many statements they've issued to try and appease people. There's been issues around the ground and again about what they propose to do. And you've made reference to it there yourself, about players not being paid. That's 3 years, 4 years that we left, 4 seasons, sorry, 3 years that we've left, and those issues were occurring when I was there. So, you know, sometimes the leopard doesn't change the spots.
Yeah, that was going to be my question in terms of Bray and Athlone. We really haven't seen anything change in the 3 or 4 years since you've left those clubs. Do you feel that as a result of that, it's holding the league back?
There's licensing issues that need to be addressed every year, and how some of these clubs can get a license is beyond me when they're a total breach of what the rules and regulations are. So the FAI needs to look at getting that part of it straight. The behaviour of some of the clubs in the way they address certain things hasn't changed, and unless that changes, the league is going to be held back. I've been a League of Ireland supporter from the time I was 4 years of age. I followed a League of Ireland club before I attached myself to any club in the UK, and I love the league, and I would be a strong advocate of promoting the league. It's brilliant to see Shane Supple and Graham Bourke involved with Ireland, not just as the token players, but actually going to, hopefully from Shane's point of view, get a cap with Graham Bourke coming off the bench the other night and playing. It's brilliant, and I think that's wonderful for the league. But the other issues at the other end of it need to be addressed properly, and strong governance needs to come in. And if it doesn't, you're going to continually get clubs not paying players, deciding where and when they'll pay, looking at certain fixtures to kind of make calls on who's going to play, who's not going to play, trying to, I suppose, determine who plays, who doesn't play, and ultimately not running the club in the right way. And it does damage the league. It damages, I hate using the word, but the brand. It damages the brand because the league does get kicked around enough. It doesn't need people who are within the league not conducting themselves or holding themselves to the standards that they should be.
Well, Alan, I think it's fair to say you've certainly faced plenty of challenges down the years, but just from speaking to you here, your passion still for the league is coming across wonderfully. So my final question to you now...
Yeah, I do. I've been coach, manager.
Yeah, is there a desire to return one day? Even a role we're seeing more prevalently now in League of Ireland is a director of football at a lot of clubs.
I personally believe in the league. And it's great to see success. It's great to see the clubs doing well in Europe. It's brilliant to see lads coming back, because I've done that with lads myself. I've been involved in that, where they come back and resurrect their career and go forward and you know, fulfil or attempt to fulfil the potential that they have. And that's why it's brilliant to see the likes of Graham Bourke and other lads coming back. Sean McGuire, I remember he was with Waterford before he went to West Ham, and he comes back and he's gone again, and he's put Andy Boyle. Andy was with UCD's under 20 team, 21 team, came to us in Shells, enhanced himself brilliantly at Dundalk. He's playing across the way, and it's brilliant when you see that consistently happening and evolving. It shows that the league is good and there's good quality, but it needs to really address the issues that keep dragging it down. Issues that, unfortunately, keep coming back up, and it appears to be with the same clubs.
Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thanks very much for joining us, and best wishes.
Cheers, Kieran. You're more than welcome.
Thanks, Alan.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Before we go, folks, I want to make you aware of a new competition here. We have a Between the Stripes LOI podcast World Cup sweepstakes starting up. So it's €10 entry, and if we can get all 32 places filled in the next few weeks, there will be €150 on offer to the winner of the competition. So check out our Facebook and Twitter accounts. Of course, our Facebook account is Between the Stripes, and we're on Twitter at Between Stripes for details there.
Are we doing the draw live as well?
We're going to be doing the draw live on Facebook Live. So very interesting stuff. So make sure you get in contact. You can pay via PayPal, so don't worry if you're not from the Longford area. Before we go, as always, huge shout out to our sponsors. Our main sponsors here at Between the Stripes LOI podcast are Flomax.ie. They are industrial equipment experts, and of course they are the major sponsors of St. Pat's this season. So we love to see everyone supporting companies that support League of Ireland football, and Flomax.ie certainly do that. Diageo.ie are the sponsors of BetweenTheStripes.ie. And finally, a big shout out to St. Mel's Brewery in Longford, who have put up a case of their lovely beer for the winner of this season's St. Mel's Brewery prediction game, which John unfortunately leads 3-0 at the moment.
Fortunately.
I'm hoping to turn that around at the weekend. But look, we'll see what happens. Anyone that's heading to the Aviva on Saturday for Ireland against the USA, of course, it's John O'Shea's big send-off. Do enjoy that one. And with the great weather at the moment, make sure you get out to an SSE Airtricity League game, let it be Premier or First Division, over the weekend and the bank holiday. We'll speak to you next Wednesday, folks. Thanks for joining us.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audio Boom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes, or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.